Hello, NYFA Hour fans. Thank you for joining us again on another Thursday. Today we have alumnus Anthony Filaroni. That name is hard. There are a lot of vowels in it, but we're going to get it right. His film, Jumpy, was a editor's choice on Vimeo, and it is amazing. We're going to show you the short, and we're going to talk to him about his process of moving from live action to animation. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
Hello, NYFA, our guests, students, and friends. Excited to come back for the 32nd episode of NYFA Hour. Unfortunately, my co-host Pega is out with the flu, so we send her our love and our hopes that she gets better soon. But in the meantime, we have Anthony with us. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm not sick.
That is good. We're glad you're not sick. Yes. Spreading of germs in this industry is terrible. It'll take whole crews down so fast.
It's easy to happen. It's like we're talking on the same microphones that get shared and... Yeah, I will avoid that.
Yeah, ear sweat in the headphones. It's gross. You gotta stay healthy. Come out when you're healthy. Stay home. Get better. So, Pega, we hope you feel better soon. In the meantime, Anthony, your film Jumpy has been doing all kinds of crazy stuff. We're definitely going to get into that in the second half of this show. But I first wanted to ask you the same question we ask all of our guests, which is, when did you first know that you were in love with film?
I don't know. That's
It's a big one.
That's a tough question. I don't know. I feel like film has just sort of always been part of my life. Mm. When I was a kid, I was watching Pretty Woman and Beetlejuice like every day, Little Mermaid. Like I had sort of all these inputs from very early on. And I think I just sort of grew up with film. And there was never like a, this is the moment where I'm like, oh, I love this thing. I think I only sort of maybe articulated it in the way like, oh, this is something that I love that I want to do when, you know, the sort of guidance counselors ask you, what do you want to do? And I was like, oh, I guess there's this thing that I love that just like, it wasn't like even sort of like a conscious thing that I put to words. Before that, it was just always part of my life.
Is there a film that kind of like stuck out for you though, where you were like, because I feel like for a lot of kids when they get into film, it's like, I could make a better movie than this.
No, I don't know. I don't even like, I can't even remember, because I just went to the movies so much. Like, we went all the time. Like, my mom and I were always at the movies. If I'm pressed to think of like a specific, like I can remember when we went to see Jurassic Park. Like I remember like that was like, oh, this is a thing.
Definitely.
This is like a big thing. A very unique like experience. I don't have that moment where I'm like, oh, I could make something better. I usually watch something and I'm like, damn it, I should give up. That's usually when I like really love something or like, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, someone's got it better.
My arrogant butt thought that I watched Gangs of New York and I was like, what is even happening? Okay. We could do this more. And that's when I started getting into film. Jurassic Park, I feel like, is a landmark for a lot of people in our generation. We actually have the guy who did a lot of the puppeting for that movie come in here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Craig Caton, who's the chair of the animation department. Came in, he brought the T-Rex's little toe, and it was huge.
That's awesome.
It's like the size of my face. It's amazing. So you're watching movies consistently. You're enjoying them. How do you transition into working in film?
I went to NYFA.
So you hadn't made a film before you got to NYFA?
No, that's not true. That's fair. Well, it's sort of like it progressed. Like, I mean, I definitely was making, you know, camcorder stuffed animal like videos when I was younger, and then when I was in high school, I grew up in Pittsburgh, so like everyone, a lot of my friends that were into film were very big, like Romero, like Zombie, like that was their thing.
I thought you were gonna say Rocky.
No, that's Philadelphia. Oh man, those are fighting words. Not the same thing. But Rocky's a great movie. But like, so my friends in high school were all about like doing the zombie movies. Like, you know, we had like breaking glass in the car and like doing all like the effects. So I did that with them. And then when I was in college, we had sort of like the campus television station that they really only covered like certain, like very specific events during the year, and the rest of the time it was just sort of there. And so I sort of just started making a lot of content. I had shows that I like hosted, but then I also, with like my friends that weren't even part of campus television, we would just run around with a camera and make shorts that were silly, or like, you know, there's one that we were like, we saw Sin City and we're like, oh yeah, we're gonna have like hyperviolet black and white. It's not very good, and it's like 40 minutes long, but that stuff would play on campus television because there's nothing else was there.
Wow.
And so I did a lot of that sort of thing, and then after I was done with that, I was like, well, I studied history, and I'm like, I need to not just like get into film. Like, I need to go to school for that. I get like move to Los Angeles and make it a little bit more active of a not just like, oh, someday, like as a side thing.
Do you remember your first film? You talked a little bit about working with stuffed animals.
I don't. I mean, I don't know where, like, they're lost somewhere, I'm sure. I don't know. I do remember I had, like, a shark that, like, had, like, a mouth that you could make talk.
Yeah.
And, like, a little lobster. I for some reason, that's burned in my mind. You know, some things, like, just, like, without context, but you can remember, like, the imagery.
Were they, like, because I feel like when I was making stories with my Barbies, there were a lot of, like, soap opera aspects to them. It's like super basic storytelling, and like, you cheated, slap, and then like someone killed somebody. Oh no.
Well, you know, the sharks, they don't slap very well, but I can see like the arms that are articulated from Barbie would make more sense. Well, I also, you know, I had a lot of Ninja Turtles action figures, but I don't think I used them as much. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember. I think it was just sort of like silly, bizarre. I was always drawing as well. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it was that sort of Beetlejuice, like Tim Burton, like I always had a lot of like weird, very like curvy and very colorful, weird stuff. So I'd imagine it was probably some sort of bizarre adventure that I was filming with the stuffed animals.
I love that. So from those early films, what do you think, like before you get into, you know, studying seriously, when you're just making them for fun, what were some of your biggest hurdles and maybe greatest lessons?
I think when I was doing it with my friends at like CMU, when I was doing it for in college, for we were doing it more proactively. Mm-hmm. I think probably one of the biggest things I learned is that, because none of my friends, they liked movies, but they weren't like really interested in it, but they wanted to do it, like, because we were doing
it's fun to shoot a movie when there's no budget and no one breathing down your neck about making sure you get all the shots. Like when you're just making it, it's like, it's just fun.
It is. And then, but also, so I, like, they didn't have, you know, they knew cinematic language as much as anybody does that's grown up as we have with, you know, film and TV being everywhere. But it's not like something they studied. But at the same time, just because they were reliable and they were into it, like, it was better than sometimes having people that aren't as passionate and don't want to be there, but do know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And sort of, if you know, it's better to have someone that you want to be around than you don't want to be around, but they're a genius.
Whether you're organized with a plan coming in or you just kind of arrive on set, you're working with a group for long hours, so a positive attitude is invaluable, yeah. Certainly.
And a lot of that stuff was very, I should say, pretty much unscripted. It was a lot of just like, here's a scenario, let's dress up in however is appropriate and let's go out, and it's just like, find the shots and then we just make it up.
Were you guys I'm just so curious, were you guys like editing on like iMovie and stuff?
We were at first, like very early on, and then we had got Final Cut pretty quickly, and a lot of the stuff we did too was like music videos, so it was very, you know, it didn't have to. It had like a story, in as much as music videos have a story, right. But like it was much more loose and sort of, you know, abstract.
Man, I used to have a teacher who'd be so pissed when we would do music videos. He's like, "You're not learning storytelling." Oh. I'd be like, "But it's so much fun." And he's like, "What is this? You're just telegraphing me story through the music. I hate this." Oh man, he used to write us really hard. But I think that doing music videos, especially as a young filmmaker, is kind of, I don't know if I even want to say easiest, but it's just such a natural place to start of, like, applying music to rhythm of, like, the editing to figuring out general story. And even then you can really futz around with, like, camera angles and things because it's a music video. If it doesn't cut together right, like, you can smash cut it because it's music.
And we would, like, we'd try to, like, do something. I mean, this is just, like, the way my bizarre brain and they were, and, like, my friends thought the same way. But, like, we would do, like, Careless Whisper, but it was, like, a guy played by me that was in love with a tree. And so it was just, like, a lot of, like, us gyrating around trees on campus and people just, like, walking by and...
Just hearing the sax solo and, like, you trying to seduce a tree, like...
Yeah, it's pretty much what you imagined.
That's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about you coming to NYFA. How do you decide, you know, you say you needed to come out to LA. Obviously, we're here. That's helpful. But, you know, why NYFA?
You know, honestly, it was kind of like I had sort of all these schools that seemed like it would be a good place to go. And like I said, I was studying history, and it was sort of like getting towards the end of my senior year, and I was already taking grad classes because I had so many requirements done. And I was just like, I don't think this is the path I want to go down. You know, I was like, so it was very late. And I was like, I was talking to my mom. I was like, what should I do? And she's like, well, if that's what you want to do, you should do it. You should apply now. And like, since it was so late, a lot of the schools didn't accept, like, I didn't have time to take, like,
they were gonna do all the late, like,
the, yeah. And so like NYFA was one of the ones that was fortunate enough to offer that, and I was like, okay, well, great. That was like one of the places that I had picked out anyway. Let's go. And yeah, it was pretty smooth process. Once like I started talking with them and everything, and yeah.
Very cool. Refresh my memory, which program did you do?
I did the filmmaking MFA 2-year program.
Dang. That's like one of the most intense courses.
It's intense.
I know those guys are always off shooting, always off making
It's movies. It's a lot. It's like, there's theory, but then there's a lot of like, just go and figure it out.
Yeah, that's kind of what I love about NYFA, because it mirrors that for my schooling too, where the very first day, they put a film camera in our hands. They're like, here's how you load it. Go out and shoot a full, like, thing, and then come back. We're going to edit it by hand.
Yeah.
And it was at many times overwhelming, but also it took a lot of the fear or apprehension out of it because you just got to get started.
Yeah.
Did you have, like, a favorite class getting started, or was there, like, a favorite project that you worked on?
I mean, we made so many, like, little projects that and like I said, similar to like what I was saying when I was in college, undergrad, I like the group that I gravitated towards, we had a lot of fun no matter what we were working on.
Sure.
So even when we weren't having fun, like it's like a good learning memory because we could fight with one another. I don't know. I mean, my thesis film, which is strangely more topical than I had imagined when I made it. I thought it was more allegorical, but it was a comedy about the KKK. And that was fun to make because all the professors were nervous. Like, they're like, you can't have 20 people in hoods outside of a liquor store in Glendale. And
the cops are going to notice.
No one, like 3 or 4 people pulled up and were like brave enough to be like, what's going on here? Like ready to take on 20 people. But then we were like, there's lights, there's cameras, just a movie. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. And they left.
Wait, okay. We have to pause and give context for people living outside of Los Angeles. But some people refer to Burbank, where our campus resides, as Mayberry, which if you don't know, is like the fictitious town from the 50s TV show where like people go fishing and everybody knows your name and it's very quaint. That's Burbank. Imagine that, but like more expensive, slightly modernized, and that's Glendale. Like Glendale is just as kind of clean and whole cut, but there's also like an upper class kind of level to it. A lot of rich people live there, a lot of executives for studios and things move their families out there because it's safe and not downtown. It almost amazes me that anybody stopped.
I was like happy that people stopped, but then like once they saw that we were shooting a movie and we're not actually racist, that they were like, okay, cool, and they left. But like I was like, I'm kind of proud that someone like stopped and was like ready to take
really
us on.
Really happy, yeah.
But like I couldn't do that now.
I think it would be definitely much harder after Charlottesville to try to film a scene like that. Like, yeah. That's probably one where you would need to call your local police department and have them be on set so as to not cause any alarm or uprisings.
But we were just students, so we were just like, let's go.
Yeah, I've definitely, before I had a brain and was early in my college years, shot in an open park with fake weapons. Definitely had the cops pull up and be like, the hell is going on here? Like, sorry, they're fake. We'll leave now. Remember to get permits. They're helpful. They will protect you. They are not that expensive when you compare them to legal fees in prison.
Especially when you're a student, permits are really cheap.
Right, yeah, definitely. Take advantage of that. So you make a comedy. How does that go over when you screen it? Did people like it?
Yeah, it went really well. Because obviously it is not a pro KKK film.
No.
it's like Romeo and Juliet, the movie. It's like the kid in the KKK and the kid in who works at the liquor store who is Indian. And so, it went over really well. I mean, it's very, farcical and really.
Do you put that into competitions? Because I feel like it's so timely.
I did when I first made it, 5, 6 years ago.
That's amazing. I kind of really want to see this project now. I want to ask you too, how did your time at NYFA change you as a filmmaker? You're making films before, kind of shotgunning them and guerrilla shooting with your college friends. You come to NYFA, you do an extensive, really intense 2-year program. How did your time change over?
I think what NYFA gave me is it put a lot of words to things that like I sort of understood, but then it's hard to articulate things when you're like, okay, I get that, like, maybe this framing feels right, but, how do you convey that? Or how do you, like, realize why it makes you feel this way? And then, then I can replicate it more, efficiently. Like, that sort of thing. I feel like it gave me a lot of, confidence, understanding in the things that I just had absorbed from watching films. Of course, I learned a lot, like, there, especially, like, anything with, like, equipment, like, technically, like, with a camera and stuff, like, my brain is so not wired that way. So I learned a lot in that regard. But in terms of, like, the theory, I feel like it really just gave me, like, a lot of confidence in that, like, oh, yeah, I knew that thing. Like, okay, now I understand, like, why it works this way, or why I would use it at this place and this time in a story, as opposed to something else.
Definitely. Let's take a look at your film, Jumpy. Actually, before we get started on that, I want to ask you really quick, who is Jumpy?
Who is Jumpy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a deep question.
I know.
Plot-wise, Jumpy is a in-game avatar in a video game. And Jumpy loves to jump.
All right, let's check out this movie. It's so cute.
Thank you.
heart is so warm. I feel all kinds of joy inside. Oh my goodness. Incredible, incredible film. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, so you go to school to do live action. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's involved in film, like animation, is an entirely different beast. How do you even get started on making an animated project?
Several years ago, I had an idea for a short that I thought would be suited for animation, because it was all about like imagination and this particular woman's point of view on the world. And so I didn't know what to do with it. And then I was always drawing when I was a kid, so I can draw quite well. And it's just something that's I'm used to. And so I always thought, well, you know, I've seen like the old videos of Walt Disney, like walking around the studio and being like, and here's how we do it, you know. And I'm like, okay, like that concept makes sense to me, you know. You do the draw the motions a little bit at a time, and then you just layer it. And I'll use Photoshop instead of a giant camera rig that they had with all the like layers. And I'm like, it could probably work that way. And so that's what I did, and I just sort of did it as I went. And I was really happy with it. And so I've just been sort of doing more and more of that. I did a music video. I've done like other little short things. And then I just try and teach myself more each time. And then for Jumpy, doing like the, you know, video game type stuff, it's just instead of drawing it with a paper and a pen and scanning it, I skip that step and I do it with pixels in Photoshop.
Heck yeah, digital. Is there an inspiration behind this story?
Behind the story? Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess I was just sort of thinking about how, like, the idea of people being, like, feeling like they're meant to do one thing or, like, you know, like, this is their purpose, and yet they're not good at it, or they're like falling short of it, or like, you know, it's just not happening, which I'm sure anybody in the entertainment industry can relate to. But sure. I feel like it's a very general thing that a lot of people would understand. And so I was just like thinking about that. And also having played video games since I was like 2 years old, it seemed like that sort of world of like, you know, if this is like the character's programmed to do, they can't succeed. It's like, well, then what do you do with yourself?
Definitely.
And so I think that was sort of the germ of the idea.
It reminded me of this saying we have at AfterBuzz, which is, if you strive for excellent, you can have, or no, if you strive for perfection, you can have everything. So people think like, oh, well, if I'm really good, then I'll get really good results. But it tends to be that so much of your effort is just a failure, just because that's part of learning, mm-hmm. that you have to strive for perfection if you want to reach excellence, if you want to have it all. And that's kind of the sense I got. It also gave me a lot of feelings of like, for those of you who follow like a lot of your old high schooler friends on Facebook and things, or even your college buddies, and you're watching them go on to achieve like these great successes, and you're still trying to do something that maybe they either achieved a long time ago, or, you know, maybe it's something that they don't even care about, but it seems small to you, and just the frustration, but also the perseverance of that, and how beautiful it is when you are able to achieve, you know, after working so hard. It's a beautiful little short film. How did you have a crew for this? How did that work?
No, I just did it. Well, so I had a composer who I reached out to when I had all the visuals done, but I did all the visuals myself. And then I just found this guy online who was doing like, Metroid like remixes of old, like, you know, like, and I was like, oh, I like that. And then he had like one original piece that was also very gamey and electronic but very emotional, so I reached out to him. His name is Luminist, and he lives in the UK.
Wow.
And like, I talked to him a couple times, and he did the music in like 2 days, and that was that.
That score came together in 2 days. It's a beautiful score.
Yeah, it's great. I was really impressed. I'm not musical at all, so I'm just like,
and so there's one thing you can't do. I'm really excited to hear about that.
There's more than one thing I can't do.
I don't know. You made an entire animation. Usually there's, you know, teams of people to do animation. Even in digital, you kind of expect like two or three people, like someone working on character design, someone to be doing the editing, and maybe someone to be, you know, storyboard the thing. How long, as a team of one, did it take you to complete this?
Well, but the other thing too is like, you know, this is not, you know, it's not full 3D. It's not like a Pixar short.
That
you
is
know?
True.
Like those type of shorts, yes, you, like the credits go on longer than the film for good reason. But like, you know, I know what I can do, and so it's like, and I try to push that each time. But like, you know, to set something in a classic, you know, very 16-bit, you know, like that type of video game world, it's there's a certain like rigidity and on like lack of finesse that it's meant to have. Do you know what I mean? Like a character that like walks like this with like three frames is what it's meant to look like and
definitely,
feel like. So
definitely.
It's like, it's a way of just like taking the limitations and what you can and can't do and make that suit it.
So speaking of Jumpy, as you're creating this character and this world, were there a lot of iterations in the design, or were you pretty confident off the bat? You knew exactly what you wanted.
Yeah, well, it's not so much confident off the back. It's just off the bat. It's just that these sort of things like usually live in my head for quite a while.
Okay.
So it's like I get the idea and I get the story, you know, pretty quick, and then I just like it'll sit for a while, and I'll think about it, and then once I, you know, start to decide, oh, the character should look this way or look that way. A lot of the work has been done, so to speak, in my brain. So there's not a lot on paper that there's many iterations. Like, there's a little bit of fine-tuning, but for the most part, I mean, Jumpy was Jumpy the first time I, like, sketched it out.
What made you... So I know you said you had an idea for animation way earlier. Mm. But, like, what about animation, you know, kind of drew you into it as a medium? And I guess for a video game story, it makes sense to do it in animation. And yet I'm still intrigued of, like, why you went to tell Jumpy's story in an animated form.
Well, I think for Jumpy in particular, again, like I said, I video games have been, like, a huge part of my brain since I was younger. And so just when I was thinking about that idea of, you know, being made to do something and not being able to do it, for whatever reason, just in my mind, I thought that a video game would be a good vessel that's relatable, that's easy to is very accessible. It's very like, you know, I really honestly wasn't thinking about this, but probably in the back of my mind, I was like, video games, anything from the 80s, like that stuff is huge for everyone now. Like everyone's like living on nostalgia. So that just makes it more palatable to people, you know?
But that's smart. But
yeah, I want to say that I was that smart and I thought like that way, but I really was just that I like video games and it seemed like, and also like I was saying, I like to challenge myself technique wise. And so I'm like, okay, I've done several hand-drawn animations. I could still be way better at that, and I you know, want to work at that, but it would be fun to do something that's set in a video game and that's video gamey, just because I love that world. And so that's, I think, really, it just seemed like, you know, this thing that I want to do and this thing that I want to do, they just fit, so.
So you're putting, because, like, okay, so my brain is like, okay, animation, I know I need to have the drawings, and I know I need to have the program in which to animate. And you're doing it digitally, so I know you don't need to draw each side hand by hand, and your settings are pretty standard, so it's not like you're drawing, like, 100 different backgrounds
right.
or, you know, flying all over the world trying to get different looks and images. But even still, like, what was the next... As you're getting started in your first time doing this, what are, like... You get the software, you start drawing. Where are you experiencing hiccups? And is there anything you wish you had known before you started that would have made your life easier?
Yeah, knowing how to animate would probably have been helpful to me. No, I mean, when I first started, I think the hiccups were really just technical, because even when I started, I didn't know After Effects, which is a very, you know, for those who don't know, is very technical, effects-heavy software. I was just using Premiere, which is basic editing. And for the, like... My first animated short that I did, which was all hand-drawn, you know, draw and then make the layers in Photoshop, very much like cells, just like, you know, the Disney painted on the transparency, and then put all those layers together in Premiere, and somehow Premiere never, like, it had a lot of problems, but it got through it.
Sure.
And then, like, as I started to do more shorts with more layers, like, Premiere just was not handling it. It just wouldn't take it. So I had to start using After Effects and start learning how to do that. And, you know, there's tutorials online how to do anything, so there's, like, no reason not to learn how to do anything, especially technical stuff like that. So, there wasn't a whole lot of hiccups. It's just, like, it's that very, like, nitty-gritty stuff that you're talking about. Like, okay, why I'm telling it to go here and it's not. Especially with Jumpy, because Jumpy is not, like you said, it's, they're little assets. It's not like I've drawn the character in a specific spot moving in a specific way. Like, I have a little Jumpy asset that I can move around as Jumpy's running. So it's like, okay, get the physics right. Like, do what I'm telling you. And for the most part, it does. But even, like, After Effects, sometimes there's just too many layers for it to handle in a certain way. But, yeah, for the most part, it got solved pretty easily.
Right on. What video games inspired this look? I see a lot of Mario.
There's definitely
in here.
A lot of Mario. I mean, I always and forever am a Zelda person.
Yes. Wait, what's your favorite Zelda game?
Well, I mean, Ocarina of Time has been, like, my favorite for...
It's really, yeah, it's super good.
Breath of the Wild is really good, though. The new one.
Twilight Princess, though.
Twilight Princess is good.
It's story-wise, it's pretty great.
The story is great. The
play-wise,
it's the game, it's kind of like Ocarina Part 2. But, yeah, the story-wise is great. I mean, Midna is a great character.
Definitely.
The music's always great, but the music for Midna in that game is excellent. No, I wouldn't begrudge Twilight Princess. They're all great. So, I mean, there's a little, like, one of the other Jumpies has, like, a sword in there. So that's, like, my little Zelda bit. But, yeah, there's, it's mostly Mario. I mean, the platforming thing is really just, that just comes down to Mario. There's little other stuff in there, like, you know, there's a little bit of Sonic in there, the character, like...
Yeah, when he rolls.
Well, and then, yeah, there's, like, the double jump, and then there's also, in Sonic, there was always, like, this big emerald that when you jump on, you could get, like,
Sonic. Yeah, and you have a diamond.
Like, yeah, and definitely. So, like, there's that part. But those are just, like, little moments. Like, yeah, as you said, the real, like, meat of it is that platforming frustration, and that's Mario, I think.
Is there a game that had a boss that you just could not defeat that maybe would have caused you to restart like Jumpy's guy did?
Oh, I mean, there were plenty of times that I've thrown controllers and I'm sure there was. I mean,
the final boss in Kingdom Hearts 1 took me forever.
Is it Seraph?
Yeah, where you're Kingdom like Hearts. you get to the final castle and like it's just you and Mickey and Donald. I think I don't even know if Goofy's there. I just remember that it was like I was 13 or something, and I was just like over and over again, like days on end, and I'm like, I'm the stupidest person on the planet. Or I played Resident Evil with my dad because we were both too scared to watch.
Yeah, I can't do that.
We would get started and maybe get, like, to the first boss. We'd be like, no, it's too scary. We have to back away.
Yeah.
Or, Final Fantasy VII also had a couple bosses where I was like, I just need to lay down now.
I couldn't get into the turn-based stuff.
That's fair.
And also, you're talking about being scared by Resident Evil. Anytime you're walking around and a random encounter happens and that, like, sound, like, it scared me. So I couldn't play the game.
Yeah, we had the surround sound set up, and so you would hear, like...
Yeah,
in the background, you're just like, what's happening?
I don't like that. Maybe, just thinking about it, maybe Meat Boy. Did you ever play Super Meat Boy?
I didn't.
That's a really challenging platformer game, so maybe there's some of that in there, too. But it's like, it's very, it eggs you on because it's meant to be, like, very, you know, you get a little bit further every time. And so it's really designed in a way that makes you want to, like, keep going and then not throw the controller. So
that's encouraging. It's nice to have a video game. I feel like sometimes the developers are antagonizing the players.
They're doing that too.
They're
for
like,
sure.
Poke, I bet you can't figure it out.
That's pretty much it too. Well, it's like you can see how you're supposed to do it. Like it's not like you have to figure it out. It's just like there's spikes on all the walls and
that's
it's like
challenging.
Yeah, it's all platforming, but
Right on. Were you surprised at the reaction, particularly the editor's choice for Vimeo? Yes.
Yeah, the staff pick.
I always want to say Venmo. They're just too close.
I didn't get any money, no. yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, oddly, with the projects that I've animated, I always feel like I'm very proud of them.
Yeah.
Like, normally, I think anybody who does anything creative, I'm sure anything, but, like, especially creative, you're always like, oh, I wish I had done this differently, or I'm not fully happy with it.
Right.
But with all the animated stuff I've done, I can say for any of their flaws, like, I'm happy with them. So I'm like, quality-wise, I'm like, it should be. And I'm just like, trying to, like, Twitter message all the, like, or tweet, I guess, as the kids say, all the, like, Vimeo staff. People are like, hey, check it out. Like, don't give me a staff pick.
Oh, so there's some strategy. I assumed that they had just found you.
They do, but there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of theory about, like, what's the best way to get noticed without being obnoxious.
Sure.
They do it all themselves. But, like, I think there's some technique that you can use. Especially, like, I had been featured on some – I had been on, like, Film School Rejects and, like, before I got the staff pick. So, like, some of these things which you have to, like, reach out to those people, like, you can't just rely on them seeing it. So right. You have to do it, you know, reach out to people in a way that's not obnoxious and just being like, look, we both know what this is. If you like it, feature it. If it fits your audience, feature it. If not, and here's all the stuff you need. And if not, that's cool. So, like, I had gotten some traction already from that. And then, like, the views had started to, like, go up a little bit. And I'm like, I feel like if they're going to notice it, it's going to happen soon. And if it doesn't, then it won't. So, like, I was very pleasantly surprised when it happened. But also, like, that day I had seen, like, some of the staff, like, members had liked the video or had, like, you know, clicked on the video, and I'm like, several at once, that's probably an indicator. And then so, like, later that day it happened, I was like, oh, that's lovely.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
I was reading some of the comments under the video, and there's such a it's got such a positive message, and it seems like a lot of people took that to heart. Was that at all? So, like, what is it like to receive those kinds of messages?
I mean, like, that's just like, I don't even know how to respond. I try to respond to all the comments, but, like, I have no real speech for, like, it's always just like, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's what you hope for, but it's just, it's so, as I said, I'm speechless. Like, it's just so nice when you hope that someone will connect with it and take what they will from it. Like, I've had a lot of people take things that I didn't even, like, think about or intend when I put in there, and I'm like, that's awesome. Like, I'm glad that that's in there and you saw it and it meant something to you. And so it's just like, I mean, that's what it's all about. So I'm always very, like, happy and humbled. And as I said, I even now, just like, I don't know what to say about it. It's just like, it's great. I can't say anything about it. It's just awesome when people are receptive to that sort of thing.
So what advice do you have to people, especially, I guess, who are interested in animation and maybe can draw, but do feel intimidated by the technology and by the kind of undertaking that animation requires? What advice do you have to them in getting started?
I think they should just give it a go. I mean, honestly, so many, like, things out there that are really moving to people. I mean, you can go on Vimeo, as this is a good example, and look at some of the animation that's on there. Not that you should be comparing yourself to other people, but, like, the style is very rough a lot of the times. It's very minimal. It's, a lot of those people are relying on the idea and their concept to get it across. I mean, I don't know do you know who Don Hertzfeld is? He's if you've seen his animation, you'd recognize there's a lot of, like, you know, my spoon is too big.
It's like salad stick figures.
Yeah, this guy has been nominated for numerous Oscars.
Yeah.
And his films are all stick figures. You know, it's all about the idea. And certainly if you have a great idea, like, sometimes the more minimal, like, stick figures, kind of, like, intriguing. It's a draw. Yeah. So I would say just mess around, like, just start doing it and just try and execute it and don't, like, have any expectations. Like, you know, don't think, oh, if this doesn't look like, you know, I don't know what, The Lion King, then you're going to give up. Like, the
huge expectations.
Yeah, but I think people get, like, even myself, of course, everyone like has like, I want it to be this, and sometimes it doesn't come out to be that, but it's like, well, is, you know, it's a step, it's a process. So just, yeah, just start drawing it one at a time and like figure it out. And animation is really, I think it's really rewarding, because it's like magic when it's really tedious and it involves a lot of patience, which I don't have. But it's like roller coasters, like, oh my God, this is so much, it's so tedious. And then like when it all moves, you're just like, wow, that's awesome. Like it really, if you think it's something that you're interested in, I think you should just give it a try and see, because you'll know pretty quickly if like that feeling of having something come to life in front of you is worth the attempt at just trying to figure it out. I think it'll be pretty apparent.
Right on. What's up next for you, Anthony?
The next thing I want to do animated wise is a feature, which is crazy.
Wow. Again, all by yourself?
No, I don't think that would be possible in my lifetime frame to finish. No, but what I'm planning to do ideally is, I have a script that I wrote that I would like to animate like a 2-minute like trailer for, to give a visual to the story.
Can you give us a little elevator pitch what the film's about?
Yeah, it's very okay. So if you would, I'll do that like, this meets this, like,
yes,
because that's how people like it, even though they say they hate it.
It just helps paint such a clear picture.
It does. It's very like a Miyazaki like world with Kimmy Schmidt as the main character. So it's like this, you know, rural, you know, very Italian, like picturesque, like a setting where magic is like, magic's bad. Everyone who has magic is bad. They're bad. And the main character is, she has magical powers, and she's like all about like trying to keep them under wraps. Like, she's not trying to like show people that. And she's very, as I say, Kimmy Schmidt-y, because she's very like bubbly and very silly. And like, but it also sort of, is like a coping mechanism. You know, this person, she's been discriminated her whole life because she has magical powers and doesn't know what to do with it. And so she comes off as this very like silly person. And so it's all about her teaming up with this wizard that people have also said is bad. And she's like not quite sure where he is or not. It seems like he wants to do this altruistic thing, and she has the power to do it. And so it's like,
this sounds like it takes place in the same universe as Kiki's Delivery Service, which is my favorite Miyazaki film.
Sure, I could say that, though. There's a lot more understanding of Kiki in that film than...
It's true. But she's still kind of the weird girl out. It takes her a second to boy in the striped shirt has to kind of get her introduced to everybody before they're.
That's true. That's true. I do love that. That's probably one of my favorites as well. Yeah, it's like it's serious, but it also has that very silly side to it.
I love that.
Yeah, and I think it's an important message that especially kids would need to hear nowadays.
I'm
that you should accept
too,
everybody.
Yes, absolutely. I want to ask you, why tell kids? I feel like so many guys I meet want to be the next like Quentin Tarantino or Martin Scorsese, which is respectable. They're incredible filmmakers, but you don't find a lot of guys wanting to tell like children's, at least at the get-go, like especially like, you know, in their youth. That usually comes as they get older.
Well, I'm getting there.
Get out of here, no.
I don't know. I mean, but I also think, there's a way to tell stories that, because like, I want to tell children's stories. It almost has like a negative connotation to it, which I don't think it does. But like, I think there's a way to tell a story that's engaging to adults as well as children, you know, especially because I think children, they're patronized a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you maybe shouldn't be showing, like, children The Thing or something. Then again, you know, I was watching The Thing, so. But, like.
Or It. Don't take your kids to see
yeah,
It.
Yeah, maybe not right away. though I used to watch Chucky, and that scarred me for life. But, like, you know, kids will, I think, maybe this is, a high benchmark. But, you know, like, Pixar movies are pretty, when they're playing to all ages, you know, I think they speak to children and adults in a very effective way.
Yeah.
And not like talking down in either way. Now, obviously it's very hard to do, but I think stories that can do that have, I don't know. I just think they have a lot of value, not just movie stories in general that can do that.
I think they have a lasting permanence. I think it's what makes Spielberg such a standout, or even Scott Snyder, who does a ton of comic book stuff. He writes a lot of Batman things that are not inappropriate for children, which I think that there's a longevity and a permanence to stories that don't exclude people, or especially by age.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And I think that work is really important. I think we need stories that we can actively enjoy and then have like open discussions with our kids about, because stories are how we tell our history.
I agree.
It's really valuable.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah. This has been a super lovely conversation. We got to talk about video games and animation and our love of Jurassic Park, which is forever one of the greatest movies of all time.
It's so good. It's just like a roller coaster ride.
It is. There's just so much joy in everyone's heart. In the original. So much joy in everyone's heart.
We'll be clear.
And it's pure. And also the scale, which is the only thing I ever talk about when I talk about that film, is how accurate the scale is. How did they do it in 93? It's impressive.
I don't know. That's why I didn't make that movie.
Guys, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you again, Anthony, for joining us today. Definitely go check out his work. What is your Vimeo name, screen name, so people can find more of your work?
I mean, honestly, the best way is if you just go to anthonyfalaroni.com.
There it is.
You can see all my work. It's all there.
Definitely go check out more of his work. It's super great. And definitely come back here next Thursday at 4 o'clock as we bring in another Knife of Guests to talk about their incredible cinematic journeys. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.